I want to be a billionaire. Who wants to be a billionaire for real? Raise your hand. Come on. If I had $1 billion to give you, would you take it? No? Come on. Like, everybody's dreamed about winning the lottery. We want to be a billionaire. What's funny is, you know, like, we sing these songs like, come to the water, you are thirsty. You know, God, you satisfy my thirst. But really, like, we want to be billionaires. I think this is true. I'm going to make a general statement here. We, collectively, as a society, and we, specific individuals in this room, we want to be rich. Look at that. It's a point in the message. If you're taking notes, write it down so you remember it. We want to be rich. And I think this is a really funny statement. I think it's comical that we want to be rich, because the reality is this. We are rich. We are already rich, and yet we want to be rich. And I think it's funny, and I think it creates all sorts of problems for us. We're doing this series called What's So Bad About? And last weekend we addressed what's so bad about alcohol. Like, we have this general perception that alcohol is bad or wrong or something that's evil. People in society look at Christianity like a group of people that are narrow-minded, and we're against everything that's cool and fun. And so we're trying to kind of address that kind of tone that is around Christianity. And there's another thing. If you read the Bible, Jesus bumps into people that are rich. He says, hey, I want to go to heaven. I want to follow you. What do I do? And like, Jesus will say these crazy things like, go sell everything you have, give all the money to the poor, and then come follow me. And so if you read through the Bible and you see these things like, don't store up treasures on earth, moth and rust, destroy those, like, don't store it. And there's all this stuff in the Bible that's cautioning us about riches, or even calling us away from riches. And so there's this understanding some people have that if I'm really, truly like going to be a Christian, like, maybe you have this fear in the back of your mind, like, I don't know that I want to go all in, because then I have to sell everything and become a missionary in another country. And like, that's like what the hardcore Christians do. And so what's the deal with being rich? Like, did you know the Bible talks about money more than heaven and hell combined? That there's about like 500 Bible verses that talk about prayer, about 500 that talk about faith, and there's 2,350 that talk about money. Like, the Bible talks about money a ton, and it mostly addresses the love of money and riches. So what's so bad about being rich? I mean, we want to be rich, but we are rich. So this is going to kind of start to answer that question. Now, you might not feel rich, but it's a matter of perspective. I want to help you understand that you are rich. A year and a half ago, I went to Uganda, and yes, I'm about to make you feel guilty and awkward, okay? So these are kids that I spent a week with in Uganda. They are kids just like you and just like the kids that you know. They're totally just like you. They're normal kids, except this is the water that they drink. Except every day when they wake up, go to the next slide, they go out to a well, They go out to a well and they pump water in these jugs every day, sometimes walking miles with the empty jugs and miles back with the heavy jugs. So they're kids just like you. They live in that part of the world, but they get their water from wells. And you get it from a faucet or from a bottle or from a refrigerator thing. And it's very different. And this water, by the way, we Americans couldn't even drink, or else we would get terribly sick. Like, you can't even drink that water. But that's what they live off of. And then here's some more pictures from my experience from my time with Uganda. So these are pictures I took with my phone. They're not things I looked up on the internet. So this is where they live. Like, they live in an entire family. You can see how big this hut is because there's a person standing right there next to it. So they get their water from wells. This was crazy. Like, one of the first days, I'm walking through where these people live and hanging with them, getting to know them. And they're digging this big hole. And go to the next one. You can kind of see it with the light a little bit better. Like, they're digging a rectangle that he's standing in, and then another rectangle inside of it. That's behind this house. They dig their own toilets. So they're just like us, except for they do this thing to get their water that's like poisonous to us. And they live in these tiny like huts with like literally it's not National Geographic. Like it's where I was. They're like actual people that actually live in this hut, like this family. They're nice. They laugh. They eat suckers. And they live in this thing. And this is what they build. So this was day one. They dug the hole that I saw. I went back every day to visit them. So go to the next slide. This is where they make their own bricks. They don't go to Home Depot and get the bricks. They don't go to, like, they make their own. So there's rows of bricks of mud that they would lay out and let them dry, and then they become bricks. So I'd go back. They built a little bit more. Like, this is in a matter of days. So they're starting to put it together and build it up. And then here's another one of – there we go. The last day, they finished this brick thing around the big hole, and then they put these things on it. You can see that there's footprints, and you stand on it, and then I don't need to demonstrate what happens next. And then they just go to the bathroom in a hole in the ground. So, like, we want – what's funny is, like, we want to be rich. Like, I want to be a billionaire. Like, we want to be rich. And at the same time, we are rich. So those are like faces that I interacted with, places that I went. Here's your statistics. You can look up tons more. You've heard them here before. Preventable diseases like diarrhea and pneumonia. Every year they take the lives of 2 million children. This isn't even counting adults. Just children who are too poor to afford proper treatment. 2 million, the population of Dallas, 2 million. If this year everyone in the city died, this city now is abandoned in a ghost town. Everybody you drive past, you see at the store, that goes to your school, all dead in a year from diarrhea or pneumonia because there's no money to treat those. So, like, this is how a ton of the world lives. A quarter of all humans, so 25% of all humans on this earth live without electricity, like 1.6 billion people. Half of the world, over 3 billion people, almost half of the world live on less than $2.50 a day. $2.50 a day, almost half the world. And then 80% of the world lives on less than $10 a day. So, like, we want to be rich, but the reality is that we are rich. All right, don't believe me? One more little statistic thing I want to show you. This is called a website called globalrichlist.com. So put the website up, the slide of that. Globalrichlist.com, you can do this. How rich are you? It's a question. You put in your annual income, all right? So I started with $30,000, all right? You probably don't know. You might know how much your parents make. But $30,000 would be like what, like, a low end of what someone would make in a first job right out of college. So if you made $30,000 a year, you would be in the top 7.16% of the richest people in the world. So that number there, 429 million, that is like you're the 429th millionth richest person in the world if you make $30,000 a year. Now, bump that up to 50,000. All right, you punch in 50,000. Now you're in the top 1%, the top 0.98% of richest people in the world. So if you just get up to 50,000, now a majority of your families probably are more like in the $100,000 range. So look at $100,000 a year, you're in the top 0.66% richest in the world. Let's just have some fun and go, I think, 500,000. So if you're at 500,000 a year, no, 200,000. 200,000, you're in the top 0.01% richest people in the world. 500,000, what's next? A million? 500,000, 0.001%. And $1 million a year, if you make $1 million a year, there's only 107,000 people in the world, and you are part of that top 0.001%. It doesn't get any smaller than that. So we want to be rich. Like, everyone has a desire, like, for more. We want to be rich, but we are rich. We are, like, that is the situation that you live in. And here's what's funny about that. Like, I tell you that. I show you that. I go, hey, you're rich. No one in the room is, like, turning to their neighbor being like, yes, I'm rich. Like, nobody's celebrating. Nobody's going, oh my gosh, I didn't know. Thank you. Woo! I'm rich, y'all. Because you don't feel rich. Like, we're rich, but you don't feel rich. You feel like you want to be rich. If I were to ask you, are you rich? You'd probably go, no, I'm not rich. Here's who's rich. Like, everybody knows somebody who's rich, but nobody is rich. You'd go, Bill Gates is rich. Mark Cuban is rich. Ross Perot's rich. This family I know at my school, they're rich. My family's not rich. Even though the reality is that you are excessively, abundantly rich compared to the rest of the world. Somehow, our culture has got our minds in a place where we don't think we're rich, even though we are rich. And this is not just for you who are in high school. John D. Rockefeller, all right, he's considered the richest man in history when you adjust for inflation. He lived back in the 1800s. He was the world's richest man, the first person worth $1 billion. And he was asked this question. Hey, how much is enough? Like, you're the richest person in all of history. How much is enough? And his answer, I think, tells us a ton and is exactly where we are. He said this, just a little bit more. How much is enough? Just a little bit more. And this illustrates this point that we are rich, but we still want to be rich. We want to be rich even though we are rich. And so what is the problem that this creates? What's wrong with that? Here's the problem, and I'm just going to come straight out with it for you, all right? And I'm going to be as clear and as honest with you as possible. The problem with wanting riches while you are rich is this. The desire for riches will never satisfy you. It will never, ever be satisfied. If you are John D. Rockefeller, you're still going to want just a little bit more. But somehow we think that riches will satisfy us. And here's the problem gets worse, all right? It's not just that you're going to live your life unsatisfied. That dissatisfaction will ruin your life. That sounds extreme. That sounds intense. But as a person who's older than you that has gone before you and is responsible for stewarding what God says in his word and sharing it with you, I can't think of a more clear way to communicate this to you that you need to hear. You need to know this, high schoolers, that a desire to be rich, a wanting to be rich, if you won the lottery, if I gave you $1 billion, that would not satisfy you. It would not make your life any better. You're like, yeah, it would. I could get these things that I want. I could get this that I want. I could pay to have this person killed. I could do, wait. I could get a private tutor. I didn't have to go to school anymore. I could do my own prom. I mean, whatever it is. Like, you would think that would satisfy you. It would not, I promise you, it would not satisfy you. And actually, the desire and the dissatisfaction that results from it, it will ruin your life. I'm going to tell you what this looks like in the world, like outside of you, and I'm going to tell you what this looks like, this desire, because you do want to be rich. I'm going to tell you how that desire is even ruining your life right now, and you might not even know it. But this is what this looks like in the world, all right? In the world, we want to be rich. We want what we don't have. And so here's what people do. People compare themselves to others. They stress out about their position. Men overwork. People get worried. Women get consumed with materialism. So do guys. You know, all this stuff. And then what happens is we start to borrow and we start to spend money we don't have. Let me just show you some statistics. I have several credit cards. Let me show you where this comes from biblically real quick. Go to 1 Timothy 6:9. I'm not just telling you that this will ruin your life. The Bible is telling you that this desire will ruin your life. But people who long to be rich, who want to be rich, that's all of us, want to be a billionaire, we fall into temptation and we're trapped by foolish and harmful desires. It's foolish to want to be rich when you are rich. You get trapped by that and it plunges you into ruin and destruction. So here's what that looks like. There's over 609 million credit cards held by consumers in the U.S., an average of 3.5 cards per user. All right, I'm in that category. I have credit cards. I'm not saying there's something wrong with credit cards. I'm just telling you that credit cards are a thing that people use. If, in case you don't know how a credit card works, what happens is you can buy stuff even if you don't have money, and the credit card, and then pay the credit card company back later, and they charge you a little bit extra more for that service. Okay, so that's what a credit card is. You buy stuff when you don't have money, or maybe you have money, but you don't have to have money. Okay, here's how that looks for America. All right, the average credit card debt is $15,956. All right, and so that is adjusted. My credit card debt is zero. And so the average is $15,000. So that means there's people that have a lot more and a lot less. But the average person owes $15,000 to a credit card company. Almost $16,000. The average mortgage debt, that's like people take a loan for a house. People owe $148,000 for houses. And the average student loan debt that people have is $33,005. So like we live in this country where our income puts us in the top 1% of all of the world. We are the richest, but we still want more, and we want so much that we spend what we don't have. And the Bible says that the borrower is the lender's slave, and we enslave ourselves to debt, where now for the rest of our lives we're paying things off. And we are trapped and enslaved by it. And here's what that result is for adults. And some of these results, some of these byproducts have affected you. Adults get stressed out about money. They get angry when it comes to issues of money. They get accusatory and they blame others when they get in trouble with money. They even will lie. They even will cheat. They even will steal. They even will get depressed. They even will have conflict and get divorced over money. Some of your families have experienced this. They will suffer anxiety and disorders that will lead them into substance abuse, even suicide, or even murder. It will ruin your life on so many levels. And so this is the world like of adulthood, as adults are just walking around stressed out, frustrated, angry, fighting, overworking, overstressing out, trying to solve all these problems, all the while overspending because we're rich, but we want to be rich all at the same time. So the problem is this desire will never be satisfied, and the desire will ruin your life. American consumers, overall, we owe $11.28 trillion in debt. When you add up all the credit card debt, all the mortgage debt, all the home loans, all the car loans, all the stuff, we owe $11.28 trillion. Our government isn't any better. The American government, America, like the richest we are, American dream. We owe $16 trillion. 17 now, they think. Trillion! Like you can't even fathom that. We are rich, but we want to be rich, and so we start borrowing, 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 and that makes us slaves. Okay, here's what that looks like for you. I really want you to think about this in your life. It's probably never been spoken. Maybe it has been spoken, but here's the assumption that you operate under every day, and see if this makes sense. There's an assumption on your life that someday you will produce a life that will be either the same or will exceed the standard of living of your parents or of the home that you live in. There's just this general understanding. I don't know that your parents have ever said it. I don't know that you've ever talked about it. But there is a feeling that you live with, and I know that it's there. It's there for each of us, even adults. That like, to be successful in life, we've got to live in a neighborhood either as nice as the one we grew up in or nicer. We've got to drive a car as nice as the one our parents drove or nicer. We've got to be able to get our kids the stuff that we got or better. We've got to be able to put our kids in the same schools that we went to or better. Like there is a standard in your life, whatever it is, and it's different for each of us, but there's this unspoken, or maybe it's spoken. You've got to get, if you want to get into this college, you've got to get these grades. And so you live your whole lives right now, you're studying. There are people that aren't here tonight because they are studying, because they are pursuing that standard. Another way to say it, nobody would ever say it this way, is they want to be rich. Right? They're pursuing that. So when you study, when you stress out about projects and tests and grades, even when you decide to do extracurriculars, maybe even when you sign up for Camp Barnabas because you can get service hours because it goes on your resume, all of these things, like this conglomeration of your life, all the pieces put together to get into the college that you want to get into, to be able to get the job that you want to get, to marry the kind of person that you want to marry, to provide for the kind of family that you want to provide for, all of it is driven by this unspoken or maybe spoken standard that you feel like you have to reach or exceed. And another way to say it is a certain amount of riches that you desire. And so it's already ruining your life as a high school student in the stress that you feel, in the anxiety that you feel, in the confusion that you feel, in the frustration that you feel, in the exhaustion that you feel. It's related. It's very intimately connected to what we said at the beginning, is that we want to be rich. And the hard thing is that we already are rich. That's what's weird. And so this desire, like, it's never satisfied. And that desire will ruin your life. So the problem, what's the problem? The problem is the desire for riches will never satisfy. The desire for riches will ruin your life. What's the answer? All right, I'm just going to straight up give it to you. This is so churchy, but oh my gosh, it's so true. You ready? What's the answer? The desire for God, the desire for God, it will always satisfy. The desire for riches will never, ever, 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 you'll never have enough. You'll never have arrived. I've arrived. I have enough. I'm at peace. I finally have the happiness that I want. I have the security and the joy that I want. It's never ever there. It doesn't satisfy. I'm trying to be prophetic in your life. I'm trying to tell you the truth. Please listen. But the desire for God, that will always satisfy your heart. And the desire for God will make you rich. But not the kind of rich, not the kind of rich that you think. Not the money kind of rich. All right? So I read you 1 Timothy 6:9. Let's look at the context that comes around it. Let's just look at verses 6 through 9, 1 Timothy. Here's what I mean. True godliness. This is why I spent so long on this message. If you could just get this verse, like, it would change your entire life. And I'm so stressed about how to communicate this to you. So I'm just going to highlight it and be like, God, like, please help them understand this. True godliness with contentment, that is great wealth. Here's what that means. The richest, like Mark Cuban or whatever, like whoever you think of, the richest person you can think of or the richest person you know, they still want more. John D. Rockefeller, they just a little bit more. They still upgrade their phones. They still remodel their kitchens. They still trade in their cars. They still buy ranch houses and lake houses and beach houses. They still, if they don't have a plane, they want a plane. If they have a plane, they want the newer plane because that plane gets old. They always, always want. They're never, ever content. We're never, ever content. But if we have godliness and we're just content with God, and we just desire God, and God, you are all I desire. I've got food to keep my body alive. I've got shelter and clothing. And so it's just meant, God, I'm just satisfied with you, and I don't really need anything else. Suddenly, all right, you only can discover this secret if you experience it. Suddenly, you're content, and you have the one thing that the richest person in the world will never have away from God, which is that contentment and that satisfaction. And that is true wealth. That's why I said with God, the desire for God will make you rich, is because you will have the thing that the rich people want, which is contentment and satisfaction. And it's just true. It's just logical. I could come at this from a million places in God's word, but look at verse 7. After all, I mean, here's the deal. We brought nothing with us when we came in the world. We can't take anything with us when we leave. Jesus himself in Matthew 6 said it in the way I mentioned earlier. He said, don't store up treasures on earth where moths and rust destroy stuff, breaks, it gets old, the operating system doesn't do the apps that you want to do anymore. Don't store up those kinds of treasures because they get old. They wear out. Eventually, this earth is going to be gone and it's all going to burn and it's just going to be done. We can't take anything with us when we leave. There's another world. There's another universe. There's another dimension that is eternal, and it's outside of this. So if you have enough food and clothing while you're on this broken earth, just be content. If you have godliness, if you have God. But people who long, this is where we were earlier. If you long to be rich in this world, you're falling into a temptation. It's a trap. It never satisfies. The stuff gets old. There's always an upgrade that's needed. There's always something better. There's always something more. And pretty soon, you're trapped by it. And you have these foolish and harmful desires, and it plunges you into ruin. It plunges you into destruction. And either you're borrowing and you're a slave, or else maybe you have so much that you don't need to borrow, and now you are running and hiding from the people that want to borrow from you, and you can't trust anybody. If you have like $1 million and your family does, you know what I'm talking about. Suddenly you can't trust anybody because you're questioning everybody's motives on whether or not they really want to be your friend, or they want to be your friend because you have a gym at your house. And you don't know who your real friend is anymore, because they want to go to your lake house, because they want to use your beach house, because they think maybe you'll let them borrow their really nice car or drive it. And you're all of a sudden you're trapped and you're plunged into ruin. So what's the problem? Let's review again. Guys, the desire for riches, and this is huge in Dallas, it will never satisfy you. And the desire for riches will ruin your life. But the answer to this problem is this: the desire for God, it will always satisfy you, and it will make you rich. It will bring you something that riches can never bring you, never provide. And so think of it like this. This is math. There's a problem and there's an answer. Like, what is in between the problem and the answer? Like, how do you get to a place where you're sad, where you have a desire for God? Like, what does that mean? How do you cultivate that? How do you get satisfied by God? How do you find true contentment? How do you get rich? What's the solution? All right, so you've got a problem and an answer. What's the solution? And here's the application, and then we're done. You decrease your desire for riches and increase your desire for God. I just said the same thing I already said. But you have to do things in your life. You have to do things that intentionally decrease your desire for riches. And then you have to do things that intentionally increase your desire for God. And I'm going to give you one really practical example. There's a lot of things you can do to decrease your desire for riches. One is, you can just like read the Bible and understand truth and ask God to change your heart. Increase your desire for God, same thing. But I'm going to give you a real practical thing that you can do that accomplishes both of these things, that decreases your attachment to this world and your desire for riches. You break yourself of that. Jesus also says in Matthew that you can't serve both God and money. Like, one of these things is going to be your master, and one is a good master, and one is a cruel master. All right, and the money is the cruel master, and you need to break free. Like, you literally are enslaved by it, and you need to run away from that master as far away as you can. All right, and you need to find a new master. So how do you break yourself of the desire? It's the desire, by the way. There's nothing wrong with riches. There's nothing wrong with having. The problem is with desiring. And all of us desire. But that is where the problem lies. God's greatest competition for your heart is not the devil. Like, you guys don't wake up each day and go, all right, today should I serve God or the devil? Like, nobody is going like, I'm not sure if I'm going to go to the Satan worshiping service or Shoreline. Like, you're not, like, that's not the competition for your heart that's going on. God's greatest competition for your heart is your stuff, is your status, is that unspoken or spoken expectation of what you need to have to be the person you want to be. And it's like a lie and it's false. But that's what's competing for your heart, all right? So how do you break out of that, all right? Simple thing to do. I want you to seek God about what you can give. Very simple. I want you to spend time, I'm asking you to spend time this week seeking God in prayer and journaling, even talking to other people, and just saying, man, God, where is an opportunity where I can give something away? Where, whoever you are, you have something. You have money. You have stuff you can sell to get money. You have stuff that's useful. You know, whatever it is. But here's what happens. It's like magical. It's amazing. When you begin to give something away, which is why the Bible says all over the place to give from your first fruits, like the first and the best of what you have. It says to tithe, which is to give a percentage. Like the Bible talks about all that stuff. The reason why isn't because, like, Jesus doesn't teach that we should give because Jesus is really needy and he's like, I need your stuff, please. Like, God owns everything. Like, God has everything. It's not like he needs our stuff. He's not greedy. You know, like, that's not it at all. Like, he wants you to give because when you give, this really powerful thing happens. And what you are breaking the control that the desire for riches have. So we're all admitting, hopefully you do, that you have a desire for riches. And when I desire more, but I take what I have and I give it away and I force myself to have less, all of a sudden that power that desire has over me, I have broken it. Because I've said, you know what? You're not going to be my master. I'm not going to hoard it all for myself and try to get more. I'm going to give some away. And I'm going to seek contentment with God. And so I'm asking you to seek God and say, God, I want to engage with you. I desire you. What can I give away? And so just give something away. And just don't, like just this one time, don't give it to the church. So that way you're not like questioning the motive of this message. Like, you know, if you guys don't give, we're not going to be able to turn on the lights and have church. Like, I'm not saying that. We're not needy. All right, I'm trying to help you break the power that the desire for riches has to ruin your life. That's what I'm trying to help you do. And so here's one example of that I want to close with. This week, I had a leader come up to me and give me a check for $790. And he said, I want to give this away. And what he was doing is he had sought God with his wife. And they had decided that to break the power that the desire for riches in their life, they needed to give away. And then where to give it away, they sought God about. And they said, I want to give this to you, and I want you to take two more Watermark students with you to Camp Barnabas that can't afford to go. And so that's why we asked that question earlier, is why aren't you going to Camp Barnabas? And so right now, if you have the courage, and if you're willing, and if you want it, I've got two registration forms right here for Camp Barnabas that are blank, but it says full scholarship on it. All right? And so I want two people that think, I have that week in June free. I would like to go and serve in that way, but the reason why I'm not going is because my parents said they couldn't pay for it. It's already paid for. We're not going to go raise funds. It's paid for. So who wants to go to Camp Barnabas? All right, here we go. We got one. Anybody else? One more. Where? There we go. Pass it back. All right. So all you guys do is you fill those out, you get them signed by your parents, and you're in, okay? And that's not like Watermark giving that away. Like, that's a person, an individual, saying, I've prayed about it, I've sought God, I don't want my wealth to rule my life and be my master, I want to be free from it, I want to be content with God and not stuff, so I'm going to give some of my stuff away. And I wanted you to see like what that feels like. Like, isn't that awesome? Like, isn't that better? Like, this person is going to know that these two people, not only are their lives going to be changed, but they're changing lives of these kids that live every day of their year broken and in pain and in fear and in struggle. And they're going to go love them for a week and then have a relationship that will change both of their lives forever. Isn't that worth more than the iPad that he could have bought? The phone that he could have bought? The trip he could have taken, you know, two nights away? I mean, come on. That's where life is found. And I want you guys to know where life is found. So I'm asking you to do this application. Spend some time seeking God about what you can give. Because otherwise, the stuff you own is going to own you. And it's a cruel master. And God does not want you to be mastered by your money. He doesn't want you to be possessed by your possessions. He wants you to be owned by him. And he alone will satisfy you. Man, I hope you're feeling this. This is good. It's good for your heart. Let me pray, and we'll have a few announcements to get out of here. God, I thank you that your word is so clear and that you don't confuse us, and you just say, hey, the desire for riches will trap you. it will plunge you to desire and destructions. But if you're godly and you're content with that, you will have something that the richest never have. I thank you for dispelling that out for us. I pray that that message would seep into our hearts and that we would have the courage to trust you with our stuff, which is really your stuff, and that we would find freedom and contentment in you and seeking you and then giving something away. And I pray that that would only multiply and continue. It wouldn't just be a one-time deal. Thank you for the opportunity for two more people to go serve with us at Camp Barnabas. And I just pray for the fruit of that week as well. In Jesus' name, amen.